It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. When someone goes to prison or jail, they can quickly become burdened by debt. They're no longer able to work their regular jobs. Their income can drop. They may have piled up legal fees, court fines, and any debt they already had before their incarceration will continue to compound. It creates significant financial challenges on top of the other life disruptions that come with incarceration. Royal Credit Union in Eau Claire is working to help reduce that burden and help incarcerated people work toward financial literacy. They run a financial education program in correctional facilities around northwestern Wisconsin that teaches incarcerated people about budgeting, credit, and smart financial decision-making. Last month, Royal received a national award from the Credit Union National Association for the success of the program, which they hope other financial institutions can replicate in other parts of the country. For learning more about how that program works and the financial challenges that incarcerated people face, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this the story of your life or maybe of a loved one, somebody in your family impacted by the criminal justice system? What kind of challenges did you see? Do you want to see more programs like this one in the Eau Claire area? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Cooper Larson is the Community Financial Education Coordinator at Royal Credit Union. She leads their Correctional Facility Financial Education Program and organized its curriculum. Cooper, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet. Happy to be here.
Well, start us off with the origin story. How did this program come to be?
Yeah, so the program started back in 2015. We partnered with an organization called Literacy Chippewa Valley. And that organization does a lot in our correctional facilities already. They tend to do the GED training, some work readiness, all of that kind of fun stuff. So we partnered to see if it would be a success. They wanted that kind of education in there, and it was, and we've only grown from there.
For the people in jail and prison you work with, what do they see when they attend your, I guess, class or workshops on financial literacy?
Yeah, so they see a lot of different stuff. We run on like a 2-class or 2-week model. It depends on the facility because they're all unique. But we start out with kind of the basics of financial education. So we talk about budgeting. We talk about how to, you know, really manage the amount of money that you have. We talk about saving, the importance of making that a habit, the importance of paying attention to interest rates and all of that. And then we do a pretty good deep dive into credit as well. We talk about credit scores. We talk about how those impact lending decisions. And we talk a lot about how to look at your credit report and how to begin making changes to that, whether it's fraud that has happened, because that's a common issue that they face, or just getting some collections figured out and getting, you know, tabs on all of that for them.
What kind of response have you gotten from people in jails and prisons that you've worked with?
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of really positive response. You know, we've found that they tend to have a general understanding of finance and kind of the basics, right, of budgeting and that credit's important. But the biggest thing that we see is an attitude change or a confidence change in them. So they feel better, you know, leaving and thinking that, okay, hey, I can actually do this. I can manage it. I know I can go to the credit union. I know I can go to whatever financial I'm at and ask the questions, and someone hopefully will help me is kind of that, you know, feeling that they have afterwards.
What are some of the, I guess, logistical challenges that come with trying to run a program like this, but in a jail or a prison?
Yeah, there's a pretty extensive approval process to be able to get volunteers in there. So we have a cross-functional team across the organization that does it, but it's a smaller one too, just due to background checks and all the different clearance that has to do with it. So that's one. There's also, you know, you're limited to what you can bring in. So making sure that our programming, you know, matches what's allowed actually in the facilities too, like no staples, no pens with erasers, you know, all that different kind of stuff is important that you don't always think of.
We are talking to Cooper Larson with the Royal Credit Union, Community Financial Education Coordinator there. She leads their Correctional Facility Financial Education Program, working with jail and prison inmates in northwestern Wisconsin. Now, as I mentioned, you won this national award for this, the hope, I think, to replicate what you're doing in other communities. What do you advise people, maybe your peers at other credit unions around the country, to do to start something like this up?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. You know, first off, I would recommend talking to someone doing it. I meet pretty often with different credit unions and individuals across the country, really, to talk about these types of programs. So I would say reach out. If you're a credit union listening, we do have a white paper and a five-step guide that we wrote with the National Credit Union Foundation. So they can find that at rcu.org/correctionaleducation. And that's a really good guide for them. But, you know, I think the biggest thing is making sure that it aligns with your mission. It aligns with what you are hoping to do. Royal, our whole philosophy is, you know, people helping people, which is ingrained in credit unions as well. And so, you know, this kind of stuff really ties into that perfectly. But making sure that it aligns with your credit union, that it aligns with the people that are going to teach it. You know, you go in there with the mindset that everyone's just a person, right? We all make mistakes. There's nothing different about us once we're in that classroom and we're all learning. So just, you know, making sure it's really the right fit for your credit union.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Appleton. Michael, hi.
Oh, hi. they told me I was going to hang out and come on in the second half of the show.
Go for it.
My comment is basically... you know, from my perspective, you know, a lot of the time, very often for incarcerated individuals, the issue is not at its core financial literacy. You know, if somebody gets out of jail or prison, and is looking for work and looking to be able to support themselves, whether employers are supposed to or not, they very often will deny folks jobs if they have prior convictions, especially felony convictions on their records. And, you know, often formerly incarcerated individuals are not able to find work or not able to find work that pays enough for them to support themselves, or minimum wage jobs are, if they can even have trouble finding apartments. You know, oftentimes landlords will deny a lease to someone based on prior convictions. And, you know, somebody can be the best budgeter in the world, but if your expenses are $1,500 and you only make $1,000, it doesn't matter how financially literate you are.
Michael, I gotcha. Thanks for the call. Cooper, financial literacy, if you don't have any finances to start with, Michael's concerned, it won't necessarily help anybody. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's one we get. You know, the individuals that we are working with, they choose to be in the class. And so a good chunk of them, you know, are part of some of the work release programs and are doing some additional education at the facilities they are being cared for at. So sometimes they do start out with, you know, a job and a decent income. I think that there are a lot of other opportunities for them to get support within the institutions and those facilities. So working with their caseworker on kind of what those options are before they get out. It's kind of all about preparing, I would say. But he's absolutely right. You know, if expenses are more than what you're making, the goal is to try and get those expenses down and utilize some of those resources. We talk about the programs that are available, whether it be, you know, food stamps or some of those different things. That's just an example. I know sometimes they don't qualify for those programs, but that's kind of how we look at it. I don't know if that's a helpful answer.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Joseph joins us now in Wauwatosa. Joseph, hello.
Hello. I'm a formerly incarcerated person, and I left when I began my incarceration. I left $20,000 worth of credit card debt on the table because I was building a house. And then I had a loan that I took out to build the house that wasn't associated with the house. So that was $54,000 worth of debt that I'm still paying off because I lost the house. So I'm paying off the debt of the house that I lost. And I just wanted to applaud your guests for implementing this program, because after being incarcerated with the gentleman that I've been, the gentleman that I was interned with, I think it's a desperately needed program. Everyone is impacted by their credit score. Everyone is impacted by finances. And I think it's just an excellent thing that you're doing. And I encourage if anybody who's incarcerated listening and that can take that program, absolutely.
Joseph, thanks a lot for the call. Cooper, just in our last moment, some encouragement there from Joseph. Would you encourage other correctional facilities around the state to reach out to try to bring this kind of training in?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is necessary, and you know, everything's customizable. So classes kind of happen and move in the direction that the individuals, the students need. So I think it's well worth their time to invest in it.
Thanks again for the call, Joseph. And Cooper, thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
That's Cooper Larson, Community Financial Education Coordinator at Royal Credit Union in Eau Claire, with us today to talk about the credit union's correctional facility education program aimed at teaching financial literacy to people in jails and prisons. Coming up, we'll take a step back and look more broadly at financial challenges facing people in the criminal justice system. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have an experience to share, your own or a loved one, would love to hear about it at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation about the financial challenges facing incarcerated people. We just heard about an award-winning correctional facility financial education program in the Eau Claire area. Now we want to look at the issue more broadly, get a better understanding of what people in the prison system experience. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the costs of incarceration? If you've been incarcerated yourself or a loved one has, did you find some surprising expenses along the way? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Marianne Olson is a regional organizer and executive assistant for Expo of Wisconsin. That stands for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. Marianne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
And Jerome Dillard is executive director and one of the founders of Expo of Wisconsin. Jerome, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jerome, people who haven't been in prison might be surprised to know that people who are in prison need spending money sometimes. They come across costs that they might not expect. What kind of things can come up?
Oh, well, there's a number of things that could come up, but most of those who are incarcerated were deemed indigent prior to their conviction. So from telephone calls to being able to have snacks can come up. I feel that where the real issues come in is once someone's released and come back into our community. And one of my pet peeves, and something I've seen for decades now, is individuals leaving prison with $60, $70, $100,000 in debt due to child support accumulating with interest over 10, 15, 20 years that an individual may be incarcerated. His child support continues to go on at a rate that whatever it was that it was set prior to his conviction throughout those years.
And Marianne, with costs during prison, now one of our WPR reporters did a story on this a couple years back, and you were quoted on healthcare copays while in prison. What kind of people, what kind of things can people run into?
Well, that I remember that story, and what I shared was I watched women while I was incarcerated have to choose quite often between getting the healthcare they needed or buying hygiene or buying laundry soap, because the medical copay was $7.50 and they only earned $8 a month. That's a very hard, agonizing choice to make that no person should have to make ever.
And Jerome, I've seen concerns that that could actually affect the health of inmates, not just their financial health, but their physical health, if they're having to make that kind of choice.
Absolutely. There are many who just do not have $7.50, believe that or not. But every time you see a healthcare provider inside our institutions, you have to pay that copay. Why we have a copay, I don't know. I know that it's budgeted through the corrections budget with the contracts that they have for healthcare providers to come in and provide services. But $7.50 could be $100 to many of those behind the walls and fences.
And Marianne, can you talk just a little bit about the economics of working and paying for stuff while you're incarcerated? What kind of jobs are there? What do they pay versus what do people spend money on while incarcerated?
Thank you. That's a great question. Many people don't recognize that if you have an institution job, the highest you'll ever make is 42 cents an hour. And those jobs are quite difficult to come by. The average pay, you're going to be making between 11 and 13 cents an hour. That's it. And we're paying a lot more than the average price for the products we're buying on Canteen. A 97-cent bottle of shampoo you can go buy in Walmart was costing us $5.60.
And the pretty big difference there. And Jerome, I've seen concerns over the years in Wisconsin and elsewhere about the high cost of communicating with people outside of prison, very high, maybe even punitive charges for things like making a phone call. Has anything changed along those lines?
Nothing at all that I'm aware of. I would say that, you know, today I talk to families who are struggling to put the bills for their loved ones who are calling them collect from our facilities in the state. And even a mom who's going without eating a couple of nights a week to be able to afford those calls. Yes, I know of places where those calls are free. So it's a mixed bag. And in this state, there's no free phone calls. And it's hardship. It's causing hardships for families.
Marianne, we just heard about that financial literacy program. Can you take us back to, you know, when you were leaving prison, going back out into the world? What was it like for you to adjust and try to figure out how to take charge of your financial life?
Thank you for asking that question, because as one of your callers shared, financial literacy isn't always the barrier. And for myself, that wasn't a barrier. I had come from a corporate background. My felony conviction was a scarlet letter. I could not get hired. And it was the first time in my entire life I did not get a job I applied for. The bias and the stigma that is placed on people who are more than the choices they regret creates barriers and obstacles that are actually a block to the safe communities we all want.
Jerome, are there changes you think we could make to set people coming out of prison, to set people up for financial success when they come out?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, I was with a friend. We were discussing something the other day, but I want to say child support is a huge barrier. And there's fines, fees, and restitutions that are required to pay. Individuals who are on supervision have to pay to be on supervision. And it's a percentage of their income. Living wage jobs are somewhat rarity for this population. And so when you have child support being taken out, you have fines, fees, and restitution that has to be paid to your agent. And then there's supervision fees. And we're not going to get into student loans and the overhead. Like your caller said, someone making $1,000 a month, but their expenses are $1,500. We continuously find ourselves in that position where, you know, oftentimes it's it. With child support, I, you know, why am I working? I'm working to pay child support. I can't even afford to get back and forth to work after paying my bills. And that's a common thread in the community for those returning from incarceration.
Marianne, based on your experience, are there things that you think either the state government could do or private employers or wherever you want to go with this to help make the transition easier to maybe open up the job market to former inmates?
There are things that are happening more and more. The city of Fitchburg is working with Expo. And I think Cooper, Associated Bank across the state of Wisconsin, has a bank to work program. And anyone who's formerly incarcerated and mentions Expo Wisconsin can get free literacy training and tangible incentives for opening up an account with Associated Bank. So there are things happening.
And Jerome, is there, apart from child support, another change you think that would help open up jobs to people coming out of prison, just in our last half a minute or so?
Well, we do know we have a worker shortage in our state. And even with that, individuals are getting work, but a living wage is, it's not just getting work, but being able to make a living wage that you can afford to pay your bills and take advantage of these financial literacy classes that you may have gotten inside or that you're getting in the community. There's some opportunities. It's a little better than it's been in years past, but there's a worker shortage around the state that's calling on anyone with a pulse to be able to work.
Thanks to both of our guests. We've heard there from Jerome Dillard, Executive Director of Expo Wisconsin, Marianne Olson, Regional Organizer for Expo. Expo is short for Ex-Incarcerated People Organizing. They're with us today to talk about financial hardships that incarcerated people face. Earlier, we heard from the coordinator of a correctional facility financial education program from Royal Credit Union in Eau Claire. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.